Hey team, things are going to look a little different coming up. But this is a good thing. Sometimes change is hard, and it's something that we have been working on in the background for a little while now. Honestly, change is good. It's the whole reason Hamish and I started the podcast, and we feel the building industry needs it. Oh, and by the way, I'm Matt, Hamish's co-host who loves to poke the bear. But what's cool is we are now recording from the Pro Climber Australia Studios, who are our major sponsor of our podcast. It's like the perfect combination. We're kind of like Batman and Robin fighting the crime against an outdated, crappy building industry. We're the perfect combination of pushing boundaries, sharing our knowledge, and starting real conversation about how we can improve the industry. Of course, I'm Batman, and really, Hamish is a little bit more like Alfred. Anyway, enjoy today's episode, which is coming directly from the Pro Climber Built to Last studio. So we are at Pro Climber Studio today at Hit V Hype. We have a very special guest, Marcus Strang, Passive House Royalty.
Well, I would say he's one of five royal masters.
Is that the royal king?
The royal king. Who's the king?
Prince Andrew. Too soon.
I don't know how I feel about that description.
You are the Prince Andrew of the Passive House. I'm not used to seeing you outside of a mountain bike. A shuttle bus. It's really weird Marcus and I were both up the south coast of New South Wales and just randomly bumped into each other.
Oh, so that wasn't set up?
No, we've been threatening for a while saying we should go mountain bike riding. And I was walking along the side of the car and I see this person like smiling at me. He's got a helmet on.
You're like, oh my God, Sanctum Homes.
I'm like, who the fuck is that guy?
Did I have my stitches in at
that
point?
Yeah, you did. You did. And I look around and it kind of took me a second. I'm like, oh, fuck, it's Marcus. Yeah. Anyway.
What's your favorite Passive House project you've worked on?
I think, anything with wood fiber, rammed earth, anything.
One certified that, like, that is the one I would want for my house?
Yeah, I think Bill Topp's project. It's like an Enerfit project.
Were you trying to say your project?
No, I was wanting to know because there's so many cool ones. I thought he was going to give some diplomatic answer. They're all beautiful homes, but I love that you just owned
it. So what's so good about that one?
I think it just used a lot of like recovered materials.
He had Which like one's
a
that?
Compressed straw in it and wood fibre as well.
Where's that?
Where is it?
That's in Northcote.
Who's the architect on that one?
He had an architect early on, but then he ended up doing a lot of the detailing and we worked together to kind of work through.
Was that owner builder?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Can we say it anyway? Is it on social media?
It is certified now. So I think, it's on the register, cool. At least the PHI one.
Yep.
Not sure if it's on the Apple one at this stage.
It a passive house if it's not certified?
It is certified.
No, but can we call it a passive house if it's not certified?
Well, it's
He's asking the question, can you call a house a passive house if it's not certified?
I guess...
The answer's no. Stop making him feel uncomfortable, man.
Go for it, man.
Marcus, who are you?
My name's Marcus Strang. I'm a passive house certifier, designer. I do some teaching for Australian Passive House Association.
Yep.
Anything high performance buildings, really good.
So, what's your background? I don't think I've ever asked you that. Education, university. Yeah,
yeah. Studied civil engineering.
Yep. Okay.
At Melbourne Uni.
Yeah.
But wasn't really so passionate about that. And then quickly found Claire Parry, who just started her company. Yeah. And that was a very,
Everyone's
very lucky.
Engineers. Everyone, they're all engineers.
Yeah. And then more recently, since working in the industry for a little while, did a PhD at the University of Queensland, focusing on.
I want to get to that.
Yeah.
You made it really good. You said high performance. What's your definition of a high performance home? Hamish, is there anyone more qualified to give us this answer?
I don't think so.
That's such a good question. I feel like maybe I said high performance very flippantly.
What would you, if something come across your desk and they say it's high performance, would you be like, no, that's not high performance?
It's probably relative to, I guess, the context of Australian buildings. For me, high performance would mean it's gone through an energy modelling process and it's sufficiently above the conventional like energy consumption.
Yeah.
Looking at some sort of optimization to like what is it currently, how can it be improved, what are some low-hanging fruits, and everyone's on board, builders on board, the clients on board to achieve some outcome. on that. But yeah, so I like anything that's really choosing energy efficiency, thermal comfort, good indoor air quality as an outcome, I would say is a high performance building.
What I like about that explanation is that you are agnostic to the modelling, whether it's PHPP or NetHERS. Yeah. Would you say that to close that off nicely is that there's as-built verification in some degree, whether that's blower door, camera, third party.
Yep.
Yeah, whether that's in-house with the builder or the architect. I think to close that loop, in my opinion, I agree with everything you say, but just to kind of put a bow around it, there needs to be verification.
And the indoor quality, you didn't specifically say HRV or airtight.
Yeah, which is what I liked about it. Yeah, I think the agnostic sort of terms there are good because I think you can still reach a high performance outcome, but then it needs to be tested.
If it's measurable, if we can say, it is achieving this outcome, then entirely agree. There's no one way to do that.
Yep. Mm. Yep. Awesome. So civil engineer, and then you met Claire Perry, and then how what's the journey to sort of end up in the role that you're in now? And
it must have been young as well. Like you would have been very young to be going to passive.
So very fortunate in that, and then kind of specialised in passive house from then on.
Wow.
So that was with Grun Consulting.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
With Claire.
And then that went to Inhabit Group.
Mm-hmm.
Inhabit Group purchased Grun Consulting at that stage. Then I went to Jacobs for a little bit, and then they were like a global consultancy.
Yeah.
And that kind of moved more into infrastructure and didn't really want to be moving that direction completely. So kind of came back again. And then, kind of started the PhD from then on and came over to HIPV Hype during COVID time as well.
So what was a PhD?
So that was looking at pathways towards net zero energy for multi-story, all timber buildings in hot and humid climates. So they kind of had those three different areas of like passive house, like ultra low energy building, CLT, cross laminated timber, like bio-based materials, and kind of those two things having originated in Scandinavian climates and looking at those in a like cooling dominated climate.
So Marcus Strang when we introduced him?
Definitely should have said Marcus Strang. So and if you think about that logically, we're talking about a material in a humid climate, that's more susceptible to mold.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because if you just replace that with concrete, what's much less lower risk.
So can we dispel a myth, or maybe I'm wrong here, is passive house required in a hot or humid environment?
I think there's always benefits for the passive house certification process in whatever climate you're in. Those main ones being, can you measure the performance? Is it like, are you actually getting that outcome? And that's part of passive house certification, having that third party to independently review those outcomes and assess that.
Because we always look at cool temperate climates, and I don't know really much about the humid side of things.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming the argument up in, say, Queensland is, we don't ever run the heater.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But do you want to maybe talk about the other things we actually and go into detail about where the house can
But maybe also talk wrong. About why the passive house criteria or the certification was implemented in the first place, because it wasn't about energy efficiency. Mm. It was about health.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because if we think about health and well-being in our cool climate, it's, mitigating the risk of mold buildup in our walls from moving inside to outside. Is that right? And then up there, it's the opposite way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's still the same risk, and it's still the health under the lens of health. Mm. And passive house, if it's a certified building, it's just solving that problem.
Yep, totally. Yeah, so we have different climatic factors where instead of vapor pressure going from the inside outwards for most of the year in that heating dominated climates, in those hot, humid, or tropical, subtropical climates, can either be more mixed or it's coming from the outside, having really high vapor pressure moving inwards. And we still need to be building that in a really safe way. And passive house standard gives us a framework to ensure that we're not going to build building that's going to accumulate moisture in the assembly itself or in the indoor space, which might mean we need a bit more dehumidification to ensure we're having that thermal comfort and good indoor air quality and low risk of moisture accumulation, but then looking at energy efficiency as well. And thermal bridging is still a relevant thing for making sure we don't have too cold still to cause dew point in a, because we're having the building cooled down, actively cooled, making sure that our cooling demand is still a really energy efficient building. So
yep.
instead of looking, on that side, insulation is still important.
Airtightness is probably more important.
Airtightness is more important. Looking at low E glazing and shading, that becomes more of a priority for reducing the cooling demand.
Yep.
Airtightness.
Having a full vapor blocker on the outside, is that?
It depends where you are in the climate, Brisbane probably kind of, more of a depends. But then, really far, Darwin, Cairns, it is actually more helpful. And I think, Proclima do have
a product that's
more suited to those tropical climates now.
And would something like Intello from Proclima, who are a sponsor, would you put Intello on a project like that, or has it become redundant?
That Intello, that's the vapor.
Yeah.
Vapor layer. You wouldn't really have that there on the internal of the airtightness. You would then push it to the external of the insulation.
Yeah.
Because you want it on the
warm side.
Warm side, which flips around to the other side.
Yeah.
So you're kind of condensing a lot of those control layers to that same position on the external of the insulation layer, so that weather-resistant membrane and the air tightness all become in that same
one of the same.
Maybe I'm wrong here. Would it just be very easy then in a hot or humid climate to get certified?
Thermal bridges aren't so critical in those climates. Insulation is not as depends if you're really far north, then insulation becomes more important again. But it is.
Just shade the building.
Does subfloor insulation become redundant? Less relevant?
Yeah, depends again.
Don't insulate your slab. No way.
Climates like Sydney, you can get away with that. But the further north you go again, it depends on cost and things like that. Mm.
You've been talking to Cam too much. It depends.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, what is probably interesting to point out here that every single project is going to be different, which is why modelling is so important to actually find out if you're hell bent on getting a predictable result, you need a model that you can't just guess.
And you would have an ERV compared to a HRV.
Far north, absolutely.
Yeah. Why is that?
Because we have the cooling demand has two different things, the sensible cooling demand and then latent cooling demand. And that's going to help bring down that latent cooling demand.
Latent is like that stickiness.
Moisture.
Okay. So it's the humidity.
If you've got that ERV, it's going to help remove passively some of that humidity in the air because it's going to transfer across the air.
Spreads it across the house evenly.
That vapor drain that we put into our HRVs here in Melbourne actually means something up there?
Definitely going to be more.
But you would also still run a full dehumidifier probably in the whole house or some perspective.
That kind of depends. There's many different ways to do that as well. You can have just a standalone unit as long as it has to be installed, me as a certifier would be checking it's there in the building.
Yeah.
Then, what the client does with it is up to them, essentially. But it's got to be there. It can be, part of the AC or part of the HRV or however it's set up within the services.
It makes so much more sense.
And also, if you're a client in those areas wanting to build a passive house, you're probably just not going to take the dehumidifier, take the photo and take it out as well. Because you're probably actually going to be...
You're committed. Committed to
it. We always talk about residential projects, a passive house. Now, you guys have done a number of, say, commercial, which I find probably potentially the more important part. I think we've both spoken openly at times at schools, childcare centres, aged care centres. They, to me, should be just compulsory passive house.
I agree.
Kind of makes sense.
Health-wise, it's a no-brainer.
Education. Look at our kids, young minds. We've got this ADHD and autism epidemic, but you put any kid in a fucking classroom with low CO2 levels, they are not going to be concentrating at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
I was never one of the students to kind of sleep in class, but during uni in those big theatres, there'd be hundreds of people in there, and it was I just just go. And it was like, and I'm so sure that it's to do with the CO2. We've got a little CO2 monitor here. Yeah.
That's pretty good though, isn't it? Is it going to be on the 500?
I think that's like the overall health rating. It just has 87 written there.
What does 87 mean?
Some algorithms.
So if someone's not watching this, there's a monitor in this little pod that we're in right now, kind of monitoring the air quality.
Hit the hyper tracking, it's Amy. Yeah,
but yeah, like health is huge. We want to build engaged students.
And it's really tough if you might not feel it like you feel it with temperature but it has an impact on our productivity for sure.
And I tell you, as a parent, I feel the impact when kids come home in the afternoon, particularly in winter, because they're closing the buildings up. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not they have the windows
run
open,
that heater.
Closed, and they're running the heater. Mm-hmm. And then the kids are feral when they get home from school.
Having the old metal asbestos portables that we grew up with, that one little box in the room.
Oh, do you know, bless the school that we go to, but we've got little portables in there, and it's, first day I walked in, I'm just like, oof.
Now, you might not be able to talk about, I don't know what projects you got on, you might have, say, NDAs or something on projects. If you got something that you're working on right now, you're like, this is like potentially a game changer?
Yeah, we have one project that is a school project that's very close to certification.
Awesome.
And it'll be spoken about at the upcoming conference.
Great.
Which is really exciting.
Awesome.
And by the time that you guys put this out, maybe it's already certified. I'm not sure.
Awesome. Where's that?
We're acting as a designer.
Is that Clifton Hill?
That's not that one. No, it's in Ballarat.
Okay.
I hope that becomes a test case or case study for...
It has to be.
Maybe for me, from a different perspective, like not on site with like as a builder or something or an architect, like you're kind of a little bit more impartial. And I know as a certifier, you play this independent role. How do we start to maybe lift that bottom part up? Like, is there any ideas that you have that doesn't get spoken enough that we just blindly don't look at?
What about, here's a thought, what about rather than saying, and I know it's been on record with me saying this, that I can't understand why everyone's just not adopting it. Rather than saying everyone should be doing it, you celebrate the success stories and then people can see it. I think people seeing it and feeling it is a better sales point than me saying, Matt, you need to build a passive house, or all our schools need to be certified buildings or have proper ventilation. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we need to celebrate them rather than, you know, throw people over the coals saying, why the fuck are you building a house like that, or why are you building a school like that? But it's like, hey, there's other options.
But look at the school, the people who are going to rave about it are the people, the kids, probably not the kids, probably more maybe the teachers.
I think it's the teachers.
Teachers. But how do you then get that message across? Because who funds the schools are generally the government. So how do you then get that feedback back to the government, to the right person who goes, teachers loved it. Then they go, did you love your old place? Yeah, I love the old place too. Oh, so why do we need it? Like, you know, like there's... I guarantee once they're in it, they're going to go, this is awesome.
Yeah, I don't know.
So I don't know.
Marcus, so, what's the answer?
Yeah, well, like with the school project, so that was William Bogue's architects who did that. Really fantastic work, great detailing all the way through. But yeah, I think like, getting some of that data and like we were talking about, like with the productivity side and like they're just more engaged, like imagine having that as, that's like such fantastic information to be able to have.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think like the videos that you're doing, like we were chatting this morning.
Pissing people off.
And just like it's so motivating to see, you know, this is what you're seeing on construction sites in comparison to like this is what you're doing on your own sites, and just the level of quality difference is incredible. But
simple.
Yeah. Yeah.
Simple. Are you talking about the size relation wrap one?
Which one? Who'd I piss off? Steel frame companies.
but then having more open days and having more, like being able to open up projects, I think is like, so yeah. I did
actually said to Liam, like, why can't you do some form of a open up for park life too? And it doesn't have to be to the general public, but maybe to some really important people, and let's get everyone in that space right now together.
I think the proof is in the pudding with that particular building. The fact that you've sold 50% already.
Amazing.
I mean, that data in of itself should be enough motivation for the next developer to build something like that.
Totally. I'm trying to get around to the projects that I do certify, to just physically hand over plaques and things like that, because it's so useful to be able to go in and talk to the clients and walk around the house and see how much they're actually enjoying it. Yeah. And I did one a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
It was delightful. It was like, again, you got to go to to experience it, and I unfortunately don't experience enough passive houses where I live, and just being able to go in is like, it's very motivating, and to see how happy they are, and like to smell the fresh air, which you it's oddly you don't really get that experience being in a building very often at all.
Yeah. I don't know if you know, Hamish, so my house is going for certification right now.
Really?
Yeah, did and
you,
Marcus.
Did you build a passive house?
Yeah. It was on TV if you didn't see
it. I'll have to go and
check it out. You can come over and I can't wait to get my plaque from Marcus, who's my certifier. Yeah. Get that little looking photo opportunity. I want to go back to the school thing. Like, do you, when you approach as a certifier, is anything different compared to a house, or it's just literally the same thing? Like, is there any
more? All the principles are the same. All the the modeling, because it's a commercial project, the modeling is quite a bit more involved.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like general assumptions that goes into residential projects, because we know typically how they operate, what people do within them to some degree.
Yeah.
Like, there's still, you know, they're all defaults in some regard, but a lot of information is specific to the project. With commercial projects, it's a little bit more in depth to figure out like what
who's
are the internal heat gains and
who's the consultant on that one.
We are.
So someone like Rob would run numbers, but then you overlook?
Or? No, so it has to be, we can't do certification on anything. Even so, if there can be no overlap between any design that we're undertaking and certification that we're undertaking. So we cannot work on the same project in that.
Even though you and Rob are different people?
So probably just to
explain that further, Marcus, you're a passive house designer. But you're also a certifier.
Correct.
And they are two different things.
Yeah. So Luke would then have to go for you.
Exactly.
Yeah, or Amelia or Scott.
Yeah.
Or
Or PHI itself.
Yeah,
oh,
okay.
So okay. So is that what you do? Or you
no, so I've, in that project, Luke is our certifier. For that.
Just that must
project.
Be some like cool conversations when you're both like so intelligent on that level. We're like, but you didn't consider this, but you didn't consider that.
we all fundamentally agree, but it is like it's a good I mean, being a designer is always a good way to keep learning, and being a certifier is a good way. We're always learning from each other continually.
Do you get to certify some of his projects?
Yeah,
too?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, if he's not nice to you, like, well, I'm not going to be nice to you on that project.
Do you know what I think? And I know that there could be some sort of I don't know what the word here is, but, you know, you guys are all friends, but you're all incredibly professional in the roles that you play within these buildings. So even if Luke or Amelia, for example, is the designer and you're the certifier, I know and have experienced you still saying to Amelia, hang on a minute, I still need this and I still need this and I still need that, or I can't do it.
Yeah.
And probably harder on them potentially, because you're like, you should know. Like, that's how I'd be. Like, I'd be harder on you building my house than
I think this is the reason why it's so great. And I was circling back to what I was saying before about a high-performance home needs some kind of verification. Yeah, like, passive house is the next level of verification. Yep,
yep. And I guess one thing with the independent review, one thing to add there is that there cannot be any sort of perceived or real or perceived conflicts of interest. So that's kind of where it comes down to, like, so we definitely cannot certify and design our own projects, but I could certify Luke's, but there still cannot be any kind of perceived or real.
And who makes that call? Is that PHI?
Yeah. So like, they would say, like, if we were looking at doing services on a project, that's something that we can't do, for instance. If I'm taking that certification
role. Yeah.
Builders, architects, let's be real for a second. We've all seen what happens when a cheap wrap fails. The callbacks, the moisture damage, the headaches. For me, wrapping a house with Proclimate is a non-negotiable of any build we do. It's about building tight, ventilating right. And when you use Proclimate's tapes and membranes, you're giving your client a premium watertight envelope that prevents the building from moisture issues. It's faster to install, tougher on site, and it means you can walk away from a job knowing that the frame is protected for decades. Don't cut corners on your envelope. Visit proclimber.com.au today, or head to the Instagram page at proclimber.au. How about failures in passive houses, people who have gone for it and failed?
Yeah, I mean, we can't give any guarantee. The earlier that we can be involved and engaged as that certifier, that that reduces risk. And something that I'm always trying to do is to be in a position to be able to submit a design stage assurance letter to the client to say, hey, we've done an initial review, we've done a pre-construction review, and that's the construction documentation set, and if it's built as per this documentation, then it will achieve certification.
One of the best investments, like we spoke about this the other day, and he asked us why we wouldn't put passive house in a contract that we're going to guarantee a passive house. It's like, well, what if that they don't go to you, get it pre-approved, and I stupidly, my first ever passive house contract, wrote, I'll give you a passive house. That is so broad. I don't know if the designer screwed the installation numbers up.
I think, so Sven came and interviewed us, so that episode would be out by now, and he asked, why wouldn't you put passive house in your contract? And I just said, well, there's too many other players involved in that. But then I think we landed on that I would, but I'd have a special condition saying if these things happen, I won't be liable for not getting certification. So if the calculations are wrong,
or the design's wrong.
Yeah, the design's wrong.
Client changes something.
There's a thermal bridge that gets missed. Like if I put the different windows in or miss out on a thermal bridge or don't install something correctly, that's 100% on me.
Yep.
Have you had it when it's you've given your tick of approval and then post that it's failed?
I have not. No,
really good. Yeah, that's good. I'm actually surprised at that answer. I thought someone would have not screwed it up.
I'm trying to like if it's like air tightness thing.
Air tightness is easy. Retrofits can be challenging. Yeah. But that comes with experience.
But I haven't had that yet.
Have you had have you had a building where, say, everything's on track and you gets to the last hurdle, air tightness is good, and there's something that, you know, there's a detail that's missing. Have you ever had a builder that has had to go back and undo work or take plaster off?
Not undo work, but just cut open a membrane and take some, like get a tape measure out and show, that's it, that's the product.
Yep.
In those cases, it was okay because it was, they could just seal it back up again.
Yep.
And there is some like movement there. Like if everything looks good, but they've missed one detail and they're happy to sign off on it, the vast majority of detailing, they've been able to prove it and show it.
Yeah. So I just got sent this before. I'm going to kind of hide who it's from, but they're doing a passive house. And this, I'm like, this is going to be a huge problem straight off. I'm just screwing the intello directly, the plaster directly to the intello.
Yeah, okay.
Mm. Like, and you're like, guys, like, that's going to most likely fail you.
Well, I mean, it depends on how well the plaster's stopped up.
Yeah, where they're putting the services on a different wall.
Or it's probably on a different wall somewhere. But that could still get air tightness.
Yeah, but my then thinking of you would be like, well, does that system work in a safe, like is that going to work
maybe
from a Wolfie perspective? Because I know with our retrofit rifle range project is that you and Cam would, it was like another language talking about ventilation in the brick cavity, veneer, whatever.
Well, the plaster might, in that scenario, might be airtight, but the intello at that point might not be.
But you're proving us with no WRB is a building going to be.
Yeah, that was a slightly different case because this is internal. So this is more, I guess, more like if where will services go and will the services keep penetrating through that intello? And
you could always use the roll flex and stuff, but I thought that like you could potentially now have issues with a mold or something getting caught in
there.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, less so for that case. With that project, that was more around, it's more probably on that external face where it's like in that case we had double brick
or brick single veneer.
Yeah, and then like kind of looking at how well ventilated that cavity is.
It was literally another language between him and Cam. I love that. Cam's got his handwritten notes out, and I'm like, I'm just the builder here.
Yeah. But so in that case, we wanted to make sure there was a good amount of airflow behind the brick, between the brick and the weather resistant membrane. So if moisture does get there or rain does go there, then it can still dry out sufficiently. Because if there's no air movement, then that dry out's not going to be very good. So essentially just putting some drainage holes and something like that will promote air movement and allow some drying capacity in that cavity.
I think that's a photo every weep hole, I think it was.
I love that.
I wasn't promised, just go around and take the photos.
Thing I've really been trying to work on just to like kind of finish that photo conversation was that as part of that submitting that design stage assurance letter, I've been putting together this, I don't know if I've done that for either of you too, but like an Excel file which just kind of outlines like a checklist of photographic documentation.
Really good,
No, and well, it just syncs in with the PHP, so it all kind of takes all that data and then just gives it in a format like, these are the thermal bridges we need, these are the insulation.
Elsie does that.
Yeah, cool.
So my easiest method is I ask all my team to turn their geolocation on, the project. Just take photos. I don't care. Film it. Do whatever you want. Mm. I take photos, and at the end, I can just go through and go here. Because you can just zoom into the spot. Now there's twice it cams. I've missed, like, I forgot to take a photo of the insulation in the ceiling at one job. And I literally had to go through my Instagram stories and go find a video from, like, archives.
Social media.
And then, like, screenshot that it's in there. I've had to do that. Yeah, okay. And you will miss it. So that checklist would come in hand.
That's entirely the point. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, like, I can tick that,
We get complacent because we kind of know it, and you just think it's going to – I've got the photo of that. I've got the photo of that.
Well, I think what Nick's doing on – I don't know. Are you certifying Ramsden Street?
Yes, I think so, actually.
So Nick's going through and just – As the details coming up, he's taking photo and sending it off straight away. Yeah, okay. Just boom, boom, boom. Now you actually don't know this. You've just bought a house, right?
I do know this.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Just a few days ago. Very exciting.
Which is exciting. Now you're in a position where I would say, like many other first home owners. So you've bought a house, and you know so much about passive house, and I'm sure you want to turn it into an NFT.
Yeah.
What are some of the low-hanging fruit things that you're going to do to this home? Because I think not everyone can build passive house. Let's just acknowledge that for a second. But I'm sure there's things.
Or it might be a long-term goal.
But there's things that you can do now that can help with energy efficiency and health. So what are some of the things that you're going to do immediately?
Good question. It's as far as like moisture control goes, it's probably actually like the worst wall buildup.
Okay.
Realistically.
What type of house? Do you want to give us a bit of
like
a rundown?
Like a small 3-bedroom house, and I got a very good price on it. Very, very happy in Coburg North.
Yeah.
And it's like on a subdivided property, but is detached.
Brick veneer or double brick?
It's just timber framed.
Yeah, okay.
But then it has like a couple of centimeters of rendered EPS on the outside.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So from
it could work really well for you though.
For Enerfit. Like I'm thinking it'll be easy to upgrade. That's my hope.
Okay. But you could potentially open the walls out. Yeah. They're all awesome. You start, you're airtight, insulated externally.
Yep.
Okay. Maybe scrum as a wood fiber and beef that up.
That's exactly what I'm hoping.
You're done. Like
let's see what Hamish says.
Let's skip the nerdy part for a second. So it's a new home. This is down the track that you want to get in an NFT. But so what are some of the things you're doing now? What's some advice to the audience who can't afford to build a brand new home with us, can't afford to like do a deep retrofit.
I want to pick you out there. Can't afford to build a home with us.
Can't afford to build a home. Yes, not us. Just can't afford to build a custom home.
It's not us or the passive house or the way that we build it.
Can't afford to build a custom home.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make that
in my project, it'll definitely be a long-term project. Just paying off the loan will be, take a while.
Yep.
But I'm really looking at the step-by-step retrofit that passive house does, and like probably most of the changes that I do will just be livability rather than thermal for a few years probably.
Yep.
Because I want to get some good data as well.
Yeah.
You might be able to certify without doing anything.
So when you say livability, like changing the layout inside?
Very, very minimally, but like I'd love to just get heat pumps, for instance.
Yes.
So probably just non-envelope related things for a few years, and I figure it'd be cool to get some existing building data, a few years of that anyway, to be able to have a comparison.
Will you take off some plaster, screw some moisture sensors into the studs?
That'd be good. I hadn't thought about like envelope monitoring, but that would be kind of
that's
be
probably but you probably well. Because to me that makes more sense than the internal because by changing it, you're gonna get to.
To me, it
makes more sense to look at the external and be like, well, is that EPS actually doing much, or humidity do we get to in that cavity, and like, is it moisture?
If we go
back to health, cost of living, and energy consumption stuff, you mentioned heat pumps, which I think is a great way forward. So heat pumps are your hot water, and they're also your ACs.
The CO2 heat pumps as well.
CO2 heat pumps, right? Yeah. So
domestic hot water. I don't think they have CO2 for split systems yet.
No, I don't.
But that would be pretty cool when they get that.
Yeah. But even still, like your split system AC is
that costs nothing to run.
400 times, efficient. So one kilowatt in, 4 kilowatts out.
The other day with my passive house, we didn't. One of the hot days, we didn't even consume a kilowatt of energy across the day.
Mm-hmm. So this is what I'm talking about. So these are, so fabric aside, you can invest a few thousand dollars, put a heat pump in, put some ACs on, draft-proof some things.
If you get some PV. So I was just
going to say, put some PV on.
The government is still incentivizing. Yep. And then looking at battery systems as
which
I haven't really.
If you do the PV, it comes down to cost. I would strip the roof off completely if the roof's in not good condition.
And put tin on?
Yeah, I'd put it, depending on what you can and can't, but if you're assuming heritage or whatever, but let's assume tin, I'd wrap it completely, batten it, get that system right, and then you're set. That means you're done, you're not touching. Yeah, the last thing you'd want is put your PV on, everything's crap, then you've got to take it off, and there's just an inherited cost along the way. That's how I would approach that situation.
Been an interesting case study. I've been interested to see retrofit an existing home.
So that's exactly what this step-by-step retrofit looks at.
Yeah.
It's not even the PHP. It's like something different, which allows you to kind of do variants across kind of – then that way you can kind of pre-certify at these different steps and say, first I'm doing this. Like the heat pumps, and then I'm updating the windows because at the moment they're just aluminium frame, single glazing.
What's wrong with them?
What would you put in?
Some beautiful, like the ideally
the oak
or FSC pine. That's
like that.
Yeah,
from Logic House.
Yeah, that would be the gold standard for me.
Yeah, Logic House. Do you want to come on as a sponsor?
But the other thing that I think we don't consider enough is air purifiers in the home, the indoor air quality. I think that's something that we...
How do they work?
I think it needs to be, from my memory, it's going to be ozone free. It's got to be better than not, even some form of...
So they're just catching particles?
Yeah, I don't know enough. Well, maybe there's a question for Cam.
Yeah.
But I think that that's something that... improve the air quality and maybe take out some nasties if there's any there is something to...
So I doubt it's going to do anything for CO2.
No. But I think it's like your P2.5 or...
It's particles.
Get rid of that.
Okay, I'd like to know more. And I'm curious to sort of, check back in over the coming years because that would be really interesting to kind of look at a zoomed out kind of 5-year renovation, which is probably what's relevant for a lot of people, particularly your age, first home, can't just spend $1 million on upgrading it like that. That's an interesting
one. I've put very little thought into this, but because it's so exciting, it's like, so heat pump probably, then windows, if that's possible, then start looking at the envelope.
Your envelope's probably pretty good. EPS nothing. And 30 mil still probably...
Yeah, the walls. But there's probably nothing else there. And there's certainly nothing under the... it's a very small crawl space. There's certainly nothing under the ground.
Yeah.
The insulation in the roof is decent. Yeah. But I don't... it's just kind of... I doubt it's been installed in any sort of nicely fitted way.
Yeah.
But there is insulation up there.
You got a thermal imaging camera here?
Yeah, we do actually.
Take one, hit the house up, grab a look save yourself jumping in the roof. I think the one that I really would love to push people to do as a building, and I don't know where it is, the outerfit. Have you done one of them yet? Like a certified outerfit? I saw it in the Passive House Institute online or something where you do it from everything from the outside.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like what you do at CAMS.
Yeah, we did that.
And funding.
We're actually doing a project which we're working on with CAM at the moment in Bry Hill where we get really close to Enerfit. If we can get...
Is this Alexandra?
No. I'll let CAM talk about that one. This one's in Bry Hill. We're now just working through the risk involved in having wood fibre outside that. So we've got timber frame... OSB peel and stick wood fibre.
Then
we're just trying to work out whether or not we need to move that weather resistive barrier to the outside of the wood fibre for long term, rodents, bushfire, termites, etc. Steico are saying it's okay to exist there. Certainly on the roof,
without it on the outside.
Yeah, certainly on the roof, you want to cover it.
Well, Steico also have a product that's actually their membrane is in there.
It's like a wax impregnated, they've actually got
a membrane on it. I know. Also saw the other day that Rockwool have a Rockwool with an Intella already. It's actually Intella from ProClimate. It's called Smart Rock, and so you just tape it all. But I don't know. I think that's more from a double masonry internal perspective.
So Rockwool, we could do. Rockwool. So our thought process around not using Rockwool as our external insulation is, one, it's a fucking pain in the ass to deal with, like work
itchy.
With.
It's so itchy
as fuck. But it's also, it's expanded rock. So it's really energy hungry to produce. Yes, wood fibre is coming from overseas at the moment. There's carbon miles on that, but the production carbon is a lot lower.
But why couldn't you just wrap? My thinking is, like, why can't you go the rigid air barrier and just run Mento over the whole external and batten and off you go?
Yeah, but you still end up, where's your extra insulation coming from?
No, you're just getting rid of the peel and stick membrane, and now you're just now moving it to the outside.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's one of the things that we're exploring. Yeah,
I love peel and stick. It's one of my favorite.
But that's the conversation we're having at the moment with another project where Sven's like, well, why don't you just put the Extasana and Mento on the outside of the wood fire? And I'm like, yeah, but.
And it's going to be safer from a moisture point of view as well.
Yeah, well, actually, you're obviously going to know a lot more about it than me, but my argument is from an air tightness point of view. This is a big building, and I know if we just monopoly built this house, no external.
Maybe 0.3 minimum.
Penetrations. If we then sheeted the entire building mm-hmm. with 80 mil OSB mm-hmm. and put peel and stick everywhere and then externally insulated, mm-hmm. like that is bulletproof air tightness. Yeah. It'd be so easy to get.
Yep.
So that's why I'm really pushing for these couple of projects to explore it. Mm-hmm. We may land on something different, but I'm like, nah, let's keep pushing and try and find out if it's feasible from a cost and practicality point of view and a safety point of view before we just put a big cross on it.
I still think if you wrap the whole house in wood fibre and then did, say, your Mento, because you've got to follow planes, you can just literally now see where your wood fibre goes.
Yeah.
So we're pretty damn airtight just because you'll visually see now.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's when you don't, you're open trust.
With,
and you're like,
without the Intello?
Well, yeah, you just do everything from the outside.
So we are exploring putting Intello on the roof in one of the projects because you've obviously got the most vapor drive up.
Oh, so you've done Intello instead of
We're not doing Intello on the walls. Mm. Well, and I'm trying ceiling. To get rid of it. So it's 90 mil frame, insulated, OSB, peel and stick, wood fibre.
Yep.
So my air tightness and WIB is sort of in the middle of the wall. Yep. But on the roof, we are going to be putting Intello because you've got much more vapor drive and then you're actually slowing the permeability through that wall assembly.
Do you have any insulation on the inside then of the Intello? Or is everything going to pop?
No. So in the roof, it's Intello insulation, OSB.
Conventional, passive house.
But just the roof.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, like, have you done an analysis?
Getting done at the moment, Marcus is doing. Not Marcus. Marcelo's doing it. Marcelo's doing it.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
That's. I think that's the only thing with. Yeah, if you're like in, I've seen that done a few times in Sydney.
Yep.
Where they've not had an internal airtightness membrane, and that's worked.
Yep. Well, Cam, I go off what Cam says. Cam's saying it's fine.
We're about to.
And that's what we did with the range.
But I'm about to do one, which I think is about to come across your desk any second, is we're having a crack at a passive house without any Intello at all, just from the outside, Extasana, and we're going to strip it back.
Yeah.
Like my thinking on this, and it's risky from my perspective, from the air tightness, but we want to build buildings to be better is the ultimate goal, just remove passive house. And it needs to be somewhat affordable. If we keep adding these extra layers to it, which the bee's knees, the Ferrari, is the Intello, but how do we then bring that back to potentially the average person, get that back to an average level and give confidence to, say, the new builder that's doing a spec home that you can get air tightness from the outside through just this method?
Well, I'm just going to just stop for a second. So ProClimber are a big sponsor of this podcast and we're not trying to advocate for removing layers of...
No.
Because this is... ProClimber have a system. It's tried and tested and use it. I'm thinking retrofit projects other projects where maybe they're...
This is a new build, by the way.
Yeah, okay. Maybe they're cost sensitive that I think you need to explore... alternate ways to get air tightness, whether resistive, healthy, low energy buildings. Retrofits are no-brainer. In my mind, no-brainer.
Retrofits are dangerous.
From the outside.
Get everyone involved instantly.
But ProClimber have a certified system.
Yep.
No, I agree. And that's, as I said, that's a Ferrari and that's the way we should build. But as we want to push more of this, and again, they are a sponsor, but we want to see widespread adoption of better buildings. So how do we just maybe give everyone the confidence that, hey, wrap your house in the extra sauna externally, let's just start there. Okay, cool, everyone's got that.
Yeah.
Now let's go into internal.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, you, it's just like maybe we've got to go back to instead of throwing four or five new concepts down people's throats. And I listened to the SBA podcast the day where they interviewed the guy from HIA.
Yeah.
And I never thought of, and I'm being very vocal about the issues and the changes and freezing the NCCs. Like, it is hard when you've got five different changes, or usually each NCC there's one change.
Yeah.
We added five. So maybe thinking passive house.
Yeah.
Let's just start with outside air tightness. Everyone's got that. Let's now add mechanical ventilation. Everyone got that?
Yeah.
Maybe we should start with mechanical ventilation
first. I mean, the biggest failure in the NCC changes is the lack of education. Yeah. Oh, that's what I think.
I still don't even know what they are, and I spend time reading it, updating it.
I'll probably just add, from the passive house certification, like certifier's perspective, so I've definitely done like many hundreds of woofy analysis on just that typical passive house assembly where you got weather resistant membrane and telo, and like we were saying, that's bee's knees, and we're definitely happy with that's safe from a moisture safety point of view. But then if we're taking off assemblies, then you just want to have that confidence through doing woofy analysis for that specific project you're looking on, because it depends on the climate, the color of the cladding,
which wall, if it's is it shaded or if it's not, how much sun's it going to get,
and it's all parameters. So you just want to, if your listener's thinking about that, probably just thinking about if that train that cost saving, but then still having some in there for some sort of hydrothermal analysis to make sure we're all happy with it.
And the thing, I think, like the hydrothermal analysis, so you can make pass if you want, it's all input data,
isn't it? Hydrothermal,
hydrothermal. There you go. Yeah. Sorry, not hydro. But if you get that's why I call it woofy.
Yeah.
Can you pronounce it? What does it actually mean?
Varma Institution.
No. Hamish had a crack.
I can't even remember.
I was
und feuchte.
Sure. You know what? You could have said anything with confidence, and I would be like, "Yep, that's what it is."
You could pretend it's input data, depending on what you input. Like, we looked at one with Cam the other day, and he's like, a good chuck on the west wall that's exposed to a ton of light, and that's probably going to be fine. But let's take the most conservative courtyard south, no sun.
Exactly.
Let's take that wall, because that is what will fail first.
100%.
And I think that's what we need to, anyone out there just wanting to throw something in the woofie to get it approved, that's not what it's there for. It's there to kind of do the opposite and disprove what you want.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
We have a segment every episode, and it's called the MEGT Mindful Moment, and I'm going to lead this one and I'm going to bring everyone into it. So MEGT's their apprentice training provider. They've come on as a sponsor, and I guess the whole idea of this segment is to, I guess, encourage apprentices to be better. Like, they're doing their apprenticeship, they're doing a certificate 3. So what we're trying to do with this segment is to encourage them to take that next step. And my moment today is, if you're working for a builder, you should have agency to challenge the way that your builder is doing things. In my opinion, you should be saying, hey, have you thought about this? Now, do it in a really respectful way. I don't think you should call out your
60. I saw this on Instagram, this builder's doing this.
Don't do that. Just do approach it with a level of, open-mindedness, and say, hey, I've seen this on Instagram. Why don't we try this? Or why don't we look into doing this way? A really good external membrane is a really great example. Super low-hanging fruit. Everyone's doing it anyway. You've got people like Performance Membranes. You've got people like us who share a whole bunch of stuff on social media. The information's out there, and encourage your employer to look at these resources to then improve and get better.
Just tell them to ask why. Why are we doing this? Like, as the apprentice going to build, like, go home to your, like, say to your builder, like, just think about why are we building this way? Like, why? I find why to be an extremely powerful word or question to potentially unravel some problems, but you just get to, you can allow people to dive into it a little bit deeper. So, Mark, I've got a final question for you. What's something that we didn't talk about today that we really should have talked about?
I feel like we discussed some really great, meaty topics. So I think, we discussed NFITs. Like, I think we all want more of those and need more of those.
But what didn't we talk about?
Yeah. Oh, man.
It's a hard question.
Yeah, it's a hard question.
Last one, I like.
It's a good question.
It threw Liam too. He's like, oh.
Yeah.
I'll give you some time.
So we spoke a bit about like the wood fiber, and you know, like we all know that's useful to be at, especially if we're talking about NFIT projects. Like that's we want that as well. And I mentioned my checklist, photographic checklist. Yep. Another tool that I'd love to probably just mention. PHI have this Excel file, obviously. It's called MEAT, like manufacturer embodied energy, something like that.
Oh.
MEEET.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that kind of looks at that embodied energy. So it's like looking at, and it just, again, plugs into the PHP modeling and allows you to kind of do not a full LCA, life cycle analysis, but looks at those materials that are in the passive house building, because the more energy efficient we become, the more the operational energy efficient, the more that embodied energy takes up that larger ratio of that equation.
Yeah, I mean if you look at the buyback period of a home, you're operational. So you're embodied, your operation's easy. Yeah. Operational carbon's an easy thing to do. Your buyback for the embodied energy is a lot harder.
Yeah. And I think that's was released maybe a few years ago, but I think not many people have seen that or looked into it. And it's not part of certification. But I think it's worthy to look at as a.
I actually didn't even know. I didn't know it existed. I've just written it down. I'm going to do some more research on that. I'm super interested in that.
Just as responsible designers, builders, I think it's good to like ask those questions and ask why can't we do this or is it actually, because you were talking about wood fiber coming internationally versus. Mineral wool that's perhaps local.
You can't make sometimes.
Those. Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes what we think intuitively isn't always the correct, or it's just worth asking those questions.
But you know what I think? The big takeaway from here is actually just asking the question.
No dumb question.
Yeah, just ask the question. Hey, what about this? Or what about that? Or why do we do this? Oh, because we've always done it that way. Oh, okay. Why don't we look at this?
If that's your answer. Someone says, oh, I've always done it this way. That is the biggest red flag to deep dive deeper. Now, I've got one more question because you said easy pH. Now, Cameron said it's cheating and he said it's the cop-out way to get a passive house.
My thoughts might still be a bit controversial on that as well. From the certification point of view, it doesn't really save much time on my point of view. There is some simplification there.
Yeah.
And then on the designer side, I haven't found it to save too much time in my workflow yet either. There's some simplification.
It's not so easy.
Yeah, not yet. And it is beta still. So it's still a beta. It's not publicly released technically. So I would say, I think in time there's probably going to be more streamlining for that. And I think, maybe if you're using only certified components, certified assemblies, that might help to do it that way. I think there's the error performance becomes a bit larger, but perhaps that's not a big issue. Depending on who you have in and who's operating and occupying that building, it's probably fairly large error in the energy consumption anyway. That's my thoughts. I don't know if that really.
No, it's good. On behalf of, I'd say, the whole Passive House community, thank you for so much, everything you have done. I would say for that community, your wealth of knowledge has been amazing. You've helped me on many times and many projects. You're always approachable. Your team here at HitV Hyper, pretty damn awesome. Looks like you've got an extremely good culture here. So thank you very much for everything that you guys have done for us.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on.
Cheers.